Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Hi, I'm Lauren Sherman, the host of Fashion People. I love fashion, obviously, but shopping for fashion online is kind of annoying. There's endless scrolling, my size is always out of stock, and I can't actually find what I want. No one has really made this work for me. That is until List. Instead of browsing different stores one by one, on List you can see and shop all of the best fashion. List is the secret shopping weapon now used by all my most stylish, cool, and in-the-know friends. Don't shop around. Join 200 million fashion shoppers, including me, on List.com. That's L-Y-S-T. Or download the List app on the App Store today.
And now, a Rob Brown Lowdown, only on the Fan Upstage.
There we go. Let's go now. Let's welcome into the show an absolute legend in the MMA game. He is a NWA Hall of Famer. He is Dan Severn joining us here on the show in preparation for SC Comic-Con coming up just a couple of weeks right here in Greenville, South Carolina. Dan, welcome to the show, young man. How you doing?
It sounds like you're about two cups of coffee ahead of me right now.
About 3.5 monsters deep this early, Dan. I'm not a morning guy.
Okay, yeah, well, I always tell people that I'm not a morning person either. I'll be up and I'll be functioning, but don't try to engage me in any kind of true conversation. There is no depth to me whatsoever at this point.
I am the same way, and yet still ended up with a morning radio show, Dan. I just make it up as I go, buddy. Dan Severn joins us here on the Rob Brown Show with Rob and Lonzo. And I will open with this, Dan. Lonzo and I both big con guys. We love these events. We love the opportunity to get to talk with actors and actresses we've seen since our childhood, people who help build culture. And as both big MMA and professional wrestling fans, when we get names like Dan Severn showing up at these events, they're opportunities for fans to engage with artists and athletes like yourself who presented these things that we love so much. What do these cons mean for you to be able to get out there and interact with fans and kind of promote the sports that made Dan Severn, Dan Severn?
Well, I mean, I look at it a lot of different ways. I mean, first off, I mean, most people will be kind of taken back because they saw of me, and then when they finally meet me, they're like going, a lot of times, like, are you on drugs? they keep you so mellowed out here right now. They're like, because they can't believe how nice and how calm I am of the demeanor, and yet they have seen me in the cage for the Ultimate Fighting Championships, and you named the organization when No Holds Barred first broke. I mean, I worked for anybody and everybody at that point in time, and when you look at some of the bragging points, I mean, the sheer fact is there's only 4 men in the world to have over 100 cage fights. I'm one of those four. There's only 3 men to have over 100 victories. I'm one of the three, but the ironic part is I faced the other three. I defeated the other three. Closest one to my age is 12 years my junior, the closest one. And then when you look at the fact that I've only done 2 training camps, 2 in a 20-year career, and then slap on the aspect of being lifetime chemical-free, when you talk about just the one industry of professional wrestling, that's almost like taboo. But then throw that into, again, the No Holds Barred era, because there were a lot of athletes that were utilizing at that point. Then you look at an organization where you had Pride, for example. They literally wanted to have Godzilla versus Mothra back in the day. So, again, I was quite an anomaly in a couple different industries.
You know, I'm from Columbus, Ohio, and the high school I went to, wrestling was it. So if you got your name up on the board and you were going to be one of the guys, you were it in high school. What was it like bringing wrestling into mixed martial arts, and how long did it take for the other guys to adjust to that style?
Well, Lonzo, let me touch on one thing because a lot, some of your listeners may not understand that. But when you said that comment about getting your name up on that board, that was huge. Like in my high school, there we had all these different, like most takedowns in a season, most pins in a season, this, that. But there was like a title and there's boards that the shop teacher probably just rounded on out and did on it. But that was a big deal. To get your name up on the wall. That was like the Hall of Fame before there ever was a Hall of Fame was in your high school. Can I get my name up on that wall? And that's all I remember as my freshman year, being in that room and looking around and go, can I get my name up there? But, okay, now getting back to what you asked of me, what was the question originally? I kind of digressed and went off into a different, chased a different rabbit here.
No, it's okay because Rob didn't wrestle, so he doesn't. I'm not saying, well, you just don't get it, Rob, but he doesn't get it. I mean, it really was a big deal to be up on that wall. But you
there's a fraternity amongst amateur wrestlers. There's a brotherhood like no other. When I meet another fellow wrestler, there's a bond right there and there because there is no other sport. When you go into a practice room where you slap hands and then you go like mad dogs after each other, and then when the session comes in, slap hands again, good to go.
Yeah,
there's no other sport like it. And it I still have, even to this day, I have friendships that I had from my high school years that will last forever.
Yeah, I'm not as old as you, but I'm 54. I still remember the names of almost everybody I wrestled, all the guys that were on the team with me. My son brought him to South Carolina. He wrestled, did really, really well, was like ranked fourth in the United States in wins at one point. And that's as close as I ever got to, I mean, you get in there and you watch wrestling, and if you've never done it, you just don't know what it feels like. It's an amazing thing. So my question was, what was it like to bring wrestling into mixed martial arts, and how long did it take those guys to adjust to that style?
Okay, I had to start by actually telling you a funny story then. My first UFC, I was able to get in. I don't know. To educate the folks that are watching, pay-per-views were not as prevalent back then as they are today. Back then, a pay-per-view, you had to go to a local movie theater in a big populated type of a city. Today, you watch it from the comfort of your cell phone. So again, you know, just to educate people, because again, the younger people are like, oh, that sounds so primitive, so medieval, but that was the way that opportunities present themselves. So when I go to my very first UFC, as I'm up at the registration desk, they've got two gals that are basically writing down all the information. My sensation was these Neanderthals that they're interviewing don't know how to write in the first place. So they're going to simply just ask you questions and they will legibly write things out for you. So they're asking you basically your name, your date, and you know, place of birth, and where do you hail from? And then they asked me the question, so what is your fighting style? And I had never been asked that question before. So I paused for a moment and I go, I'm an amateur wrestler. Well, they had never heard that response before. And the gal that's writing down the information, she kind of looks left and right, and then she kind of leans on in. She goes, what exactly does that do? So I kind of mocked her. I kind of looked left and right, and I leaned on in. I go, you might want to watch. I'm kind of making this up as I go. And literally, she starts laughing like at me, like she's on candid camera. Where's the hidden camera? And I mean, literally, I only trained for 5 days, an hour and a half a day. I trained over in Lima, Ohio with Al Snow, professional wrestling trainer slash a talent, Al Snow. And I mean, because a professional wrestling ring was the only thing that I could find that had some kind of a confinement. And they had one old pair of boxing gloves. And most of the time they were arguing amongst each other who had to go against me. I never threw a single punch. They would simply try to punch. I would parry. I would clinch. And then I went into wrestling mode. I would throw them around. And then I would slap on amateur wrestling techniques. Now, again, Rob, Lonzo will understand this. Amateur wrestling is basically, it's legalized pain. You're doing... you're doing wrestling techniques that literally doesn't feel good. In order, ultimately, you want to pin your opponent. You want to put them on the back and you'll pin them against their will. So when you're throwing on chicken wings and cross faces and cradles, stuff like this, none of this stuff feels good. It's not like you're out there going, coo-chi-coo-chi-coo, and they're going to roll around the back and you pin them. No, you are imposing against their will legalized pain. So that's all I did with all of those guys. I simply slapped on amateur wrestling techniques and it's like going, but turn them illegal. And we're good to go. That was my training camp. 5 days, hour and a half. I wish I had some kind of video footage from that time era, because people would look at that as pure gold. Because, again, never learned a single strike, never learned a single submission, and here I am in UFC number 4 and the 8-man tournament where you had to finish off 3 men and a 2-hour pay-per-view, the same 2-hour pay-per-view that lasts today.
Dan the Beast Severn joining us here on the show. 101-19-7 record, 23 knockouts, 24 decisions, and 54 submissions. And I wanted to kind of, before we get to the professional wrestling angle, ask you about the evolution of UFC from where it was then to where it is now, because you talk about an hour and a half in a wrestling ring, didn't learn strikes, just kind of made it up as you go, versus now where these guys are living minute to minute, every single calorie they eat, every single nutrient they take. I mean, all of it is scientifically calculated.
Yes.
Do you think that it has made professional fighting better, worse, just different in general? When you watch UFC now, when you watch MMA now, how do you feel about the level of intensity these guys put into the training versus back when it was 4 and you might have 2 or 3 fights in the same night through a tournament?
Well, I mean, yeah, it has gone on to a whole different plateau. I mean, men and women are going into training camps for 6 to 8 months out. And I mean, literally to the point that they have their own personal chef that's making all their specialized meals so they can get down to that weight class. It is quite a science. When I watch an event now, I really question some of their coaches, because the sport has evolved in some aspects and in some other aspects they have not. As I always tell people, I was a one-trick pony when I went into it. I was just a wrestler. But my mindset was simply this. If you're the striker, because that's what the two categories, grapplers or strikers. As a striker, you have to be within arm's reach in order to punch me. Legs, range to kick, knee, elbow. I was always good about slightly staying outside of range. And the moment that whether you threw something, you're going to throw and you're going to recoil back. Or if I threw something, as I threw something, came forward and shortened that distance. The moment that you threw out, you are now within arm's reach, legs reach, or whatever. And I was good about closing that distance quickly to get to a standing clinch or a takedown or jam them up against the cage wall, which is now known as close quarter combatives. I really question a lot of these coaches that they're working with them about what they're teaching. The night that, again, we'll go back a couple of years here, but Conor McGregor ended up fighting Cowboy Cerrone. And they end up getting into a clinch, and Conor McGregor punches Cowboy Cerrone with the shoulder, breaking his nose, making him bleed from the nose. The moment that happened, my cell phone exploded. I had all these people contact me like, oh, that's twice now I picked it up.
And, popular guy over here.
Sorry about that. I'm just going to turn the volume right down and we will do away with that. But when it happened, like I said, my phone exploded and I had all these people saying, did Conor McGregor finally take a seminar from you? And I go, no. I said, had he done it, he would have followed up with this. And be like, oh, yeah, you're right. He sucks. Okay. So, I mean, I've been teaching close quarter combat. Because literally, when I went at my first UFC, I gave a great deal of thought. I'm just a wrestler. I'm never going to win this. I started my career at 37 inside this cage. I started my amateur wrestling career back in seventh grade, 1969. So when you look at these were never going to catch up to my grappling ability. You know, but if I, as long as I can keep them up to where I can deflect and block a couple things just to get to that clinch, I'm good to go. Because once you get to that clinch, takedown, or jammed up against that cage wall, from a grappler's from a striker's perspective, you've nullified 90%+ of their arsenal. When you look at boxing, kickboxing, Muay Thai, they get in these clinches all the time. Their referee spends more time separating the two athletes than they actually do banging on each other. But my whole aspect was, I will get this clinch, though, that my skill set is just commencing. And look at, it's one of the most simple things, because basically you take people on down and they all want to pull guard. Guard this. This is called Donkey Kong, whack-a-mole. You know, ground and pound was born. Very, very easy, very barbaric, but oh so effective. All you got to do is ball up your fist, much like a club, and start to bludgeon your opponent somewhere around that head, neck, and chest region. And, you know, if you do it effectively enough, you know, the match will be halted at that point. But there are still things that I do even now. I still don't see any of these athletes doing it. I'm like going, who is your coach?
All right. So speaking of bludgeoning, I was watching some old matches last night. I didn't know that this was allowed back in early UFC. We've heard tell by a lot of people that when you, especially in professional wrestling, when you give a headbutt, you should sell it. I saw a match where you were giving headbutts, but it didn't look like it hurt you nearly as bad as it hurt the person who was receiving. So does it hurt to give successive headbutts like what I saw on a match last night?
Well, the match you're probably referring to, Oleg Tatarov, the Russian Bear. Again, my background as an amateur wrestler, not just my amateur background is folk style wrestling, which is only inside the United States. We're the only country that does folk style. It's what we do in our junior high, our high school, and on a collegiate level. The rest of the world does freestyle and Greco-Roman. Those are the two styles that are done at the world championships every year and every 4 years at the Olympic Games. So by the time your collegiate career comes to an end, you're basically 21, 22, and you now only have one opportunity. You've been doing folk style all your life, and now your only chance to represent the United States is freestyle or Greco. So that's why the United States is at a deficit every time when we're looking at Olympic Games or the World Championships, because now at 21, 22, and they've been doing it since, whatever, 3 or 4 years of age that they've been doing. Like the Russians, they teach them how to throw first, because it's their children. And they simply know that if they can make it fun and like a game being thrown onto these crash pads, stuff like that, it's just a game to them. But the Russians are the best technicians in the world, hands down. And I knew that going out on the mat, I'm going to have to half kill a man in order to beat him. And actually, I've gone up against Oleg twice, and I basically half killed him both times. First time, dropping knees, and that was the first time I think anyone ever saw a person was standing, dropping a knee on a person in the prone position, which is illegal today. Again, as the rules have changed. But again, that's the difference between no holds barred and what mixed martial arts is. And then in my match against Oleg on the second time, I delivered well over 300 headbutts in a 30-minute match. Literally, I was delivering a headbutt every minute. But how do you practice a headbutt? You say, hey, Rob, hey, Lonzo, hey, how does this one feel? No, you don't practice with live people. My three most reliable workout partners when I was working out, I have a throwing dummy, I have a heavy bag, and I had a wall-mounted takedown machine. And I use these three pieces of equipment in ways that I guarantee no other person has ever used these pieces of equipment. And the pros are, they were always on time. They never complained. So, and I would do things to them that I hope I never had to do to another person. But I had already prepared myself. And again, going against Oleg, I'm going to have kill a man in the process. And literally after that match with those 300 headbutts, they literally, within a few minutes after the match was done, his skull started to swell up. They had to rush him to the hospital. I took 2 ibuprofen. I was good to go.
Dan the Beast Severn telling you exactly how he earned the nickname. All right, let's flip Dan for just a couple of minutes here, if you don't mind, to professional wrestling. You're a two-time NWA World Heavyweight Champion and NWA Hall of Famer. Obviously spent some time with the then WWF as well. 1998 King of the Ring Tournament semifinalist, where you were knocked out by a young man that would go on to become The Rock, Dwayne Johnson. But obviously, the story that I'm sure you get a lot of questions, and most questions about, would be your departure. And we have seen over the years this kind of interesting, especially the really the last couple of years, this interesting perspective where it kind of feels like wrestlers are beginning to want more control over their characters, their storylines. And certainly that dates back and it's always been that way. But now we're starting to see guys like, for instance, Bray Wyatt right now in the WWE, where there's this, they want the control. Obviously, you had your story about the reason that you left over creative differences, etc. What is your view on the way that professional wrestling looks today versus in the 90s when you were at the top of that game?
Well, I wish I would have understood the industry a little bit more. I think I would have put in a little bit more input as to how I would like my character to have been. When they simply just pitched me the nutty idea of putting 666 on my forehead and becoming a disciple of this whole darkness type thing, and I'm just like, going, no, time out, not going to happen. I live in a small town, USA. I go, I'm not going to have any repercussions against my family, nor against my businesses, nor against me. So, because you'd be surprised how many people actually buy into these things. So, I'll just say that we just had an amicable parting of the ways. I mean, I just basically just, honored up whatever matches I had to do, and that was about it. But I was had a very creative contract, in fact, that I had no limitations. I could work for anybody because I was working for the National Wrestling Alliance in the first place. And then the National Wrestling Alliance was trying to put me underneath an exclusivity. I go, what if I have an opportunity on a weekend and you guys don't need me? I said, I should be able to work and stuff like that. And well, no, we really want a controller. I go, well, I can't sign that. But I go, but I was not a normal type of professional wrestler that they had probably ever used before. Coming from that amateur wrestling background, I had a great deal of honor in what I was doing. I'm not going to simply do the job for Doink the Clown. I always use that kind of as an example. I'm not going to lose to Doink the Clown, okay? I'm going to protect myself and those type of aspects, but you do see some of the most craziest things happen in the sport of professional wrestling. It's an entertainment sport, and they're highly skilled athletes, because when you look at all these athletic maneuvers that they're doing, and they don't have a safety net, that's tough. I mean, even the expression of taking a bump, of being picked up and being bodily slammed, or just being punched and taking your own bump, most professional wrestlers don't even realize that they're doing the most basic fundamentals of martial arts break falling. And more professional wrestlers really need to take a class in that, because their careers are cut short because they do take some outlandish falls. So I know I kind of went around your question here just a little bit. I always tell people, I'm kind of an educator to people. I want them to understand a little bit more about which each one of these industries are like, and the perils that a lot of these wrestlers face. Because there's also, let's, jealousy. Why should you win and not me? Why do you get the push and not me? And so maybe there's that big high dive. You've been thrown out of the ring, and now there's this big high dive that's going to take place. But all of a sudden, you slip, you fall down, and you come up short, and all of a sudden, he splat. Hits the concrete. Oh, sorry. But I've actually witnessed this. And I've seen jealousy to where now you're gone and I move up another rung. Because you got to look at, with success in that, there's money.
Sure.
You move up, there is a pecking order in that. So that's again, I kind of digress in a couple of different ways, but I really want people to kind of understand there's a dark side to professional wrestling, as there's a positive side, but you know, all industries have their pros and cons.
Dan Severn, join us on the show, last one, and then we'll let you know, go, Dan, because I know you got a lot going on. We saw when you entered, we saw Ken Shamrock enter. We've seen the Blackwells of the world, but now it's almost like professional wrestling, as it has kind of, with social media, et cetera, the kayfabe element has kind of started to be pulled back a little bit. And now you're seeing guys like Bobby Lashley. You're seeing guys like Brock Lesnar, a former UFC heavyweight champion, et cetera, that are not just moving over into wrestling, but they're kind of blurring that line between an MMA or term professional wrestler. They're utilizing a lot of MMA tactics in the ring, et cetera. You were kind of at the beginning of the genesis of that movement. How much are you pro or con? Are you in favor of UFC MMA type tactics kind of being sold in professional wrestling to make guys like Brock and Bobby Lashley look like these beasts when they move over into that world?
No, I mean, it's the progression of professional wrestling. I knew darn well that that more and more athletes have been moving in there. And I'm trying to think of the recent last year NCAA heavyweight champion that just moved over as well from amateur wrestling.
Stevenson.
Yes. So again, if you got the size, the thing that Vince always was someone that was always looking for these big monsters. He always wanted to have, like having the big show and stuff like that in it. He always wanted to have, the giant. So to take some people, athletes from other disciplines and be able to move them in. I mean, you got, look at Ronda Rousey. She had to run for a while there. I mean, she was the armbar queen in mixed martial arts, and she, was a perfect heel for going into professional wrestling. Yeah. So again, there will always be that mixture. You've had a lot of other people that have been at various events. Pete Rose, for example. Look at when they brought back people like Pete Rose and other people that they brought back from other industries, just to, I think, to help cross over to different audiences.
Dan the Beast Severn joining us here on the show. He is a UFC Triple Crown champion. Ended his MMA career with 101 wins, 19-7, the full record, 23 KOs, 24 decisions, 54 submissions, a two-time NWA World Heavyweight Champion and NWA Hall of Famer. And by the way, and we'll have you maybe during Comic-Con, we'll get to talk to you again. I want some stories of the Sun-Kissed Kids when we get a second to talk about that. He will be live at South Carolina Comic-Con on April 15th and 16th, just a month away. You can go to SC Comic Con and get your tickets now. Dan Severn, an honor to talk to you, buddy. So glad to have you on the show, and we will see you in mid-April, my man.
Thank you, gentlemen, there, for having me this morning. If anyone else wants to get contact with me, just simply go to my website, dansevern.com.
There you go. Get it hooked up. Dan, we'll talk to you at Comic Con, man. Thank you very much.
Have a great rest of your day.
You as well. Thank you very much, sir. That, ladies and gentlemen, was Dan Severn, the Beast.
The Rob Brown Show. Get Rob at thefanupstate.com.
Protect your vehicle's engine with a full synthetic oil change and save with Mobil 1 at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Purchase 5 quarts of Mobil 1 full synthetic motor oil and receive a $10 O'Reilly gift card after rebate. See store for details. With your Mobil 1 purchase, you'll also receive 2x points during Old Rewards Bonus Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly Auto Parts.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of 4 amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get 4 iPhone 15s on us and 4 lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
Now with the MLB app, you can get baseball your way.
Pick your favorite team, your favorite players, and get customized highlights, stories, and breaking news right on your home feed. Follow the action with Game 10, where 3D replays add another dimension. Plus, notifications can keep you connected to every pitch, every hit, every game. The MLB app. Baseball, your way. Download it now for free from the App Store or Google Play. Blackout and other restrictions apply. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.